Welcome, everyone, to the Workforce Navigator podcast. I'm Steve McDonald, your host. We have a very special guest from the manufacturing sector, Monica Anderton. Monica, you're the CHRO of a major division of DH Smith, and I'm going to let you talk a little bit about that in just a minute here. But we're going to talk about navigating this retention, recruitment, the challenges specifically in the manufacturing industry, which we all know the growth and the need that we have and where we are in terms of capacity and the workforce that's available to us. So this is going to help us because there's so many different sectors in the industry that are challenged in terms of workforce shortages and what we have to do and how we have to be creative in order to come up with strategies and how do we succeed. This has massive impact on our businesses. In terms of massive impact on business, you've got a business background. You have degrees in business. You're very analytical. You're a global CHRO, but you align yourself very much with what's the long-term growth and impact on the business. And so I think we're going to learn a lot today from you. But if you wouldn't mind, maybe just spend a minute, tell us a little bit more about your background and the company.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here, Steve. Yeah, I always like to say I'm a global business leader that just has an emphasis on the HR function because I think you really have to have that business savvy to understand what's going on so that we can do the people part. I'm getting up there in my career. I've worked in a variety of industries. Telecom, retail, banking, manufacturing. But the last 15 years or so, it's been manufacturing. I think I've settled into an industry that I really like. As you said, I'm the head of HR for DS Smith North America's packaging and paper division. And I've been here since 2019. And I came in about 2 years after DS Smith acquired their first set of companies in North America to grow their footprint in North America. And I've been here about 5 years and it's been really quick. We've got about 16 facilities in North America and our headquarters is in Atlanta. And what else can I tell you? Let me tell you a little bit about DS Smith because you probably don't want to hear all about me. I could go on and on because I'm getting up there in my career. But DS Smith is headquartered in London and we operate in 34 countries. So we have about 30,000 employees. In North America specifically, we have about 2,000. We have 16 sites and then we headquarter in Atlanta, which is where I'm at. And our niche is we are the leading provider of sustainable fiber-based packaging worldwide, which is supported by our recycling efforts and our paper-making operations. And it's really a central part of our value chain across the sectors in e-commerce, fast-moving consumer goods, and industrials. And our tagline, which I just love, is our purpose is redefining packaging for a changing world. And that's rooted on a now and next sustainability strategy. And really, our niche is providing solutions around the circular economy and a sustainability platform that really impacts the wider society. And we've taken out plastics in our business. We're taking out carbon in our supply chains. And we've got some really cool, innovative recycling solutions that we do all across the globe. So a little bit about DS, a little bit about Monica, but really excited to be here.
Good. Here's what I'd love to do. An extensive background and experience you have. So I think you are probably one of the leading authorities to talk about what are the HR challenges in the manufacturing sector? Like, how would you just lay the foundation for what those challenges are for us?
Yeah, let's just talk post-COVID especially, but the U.S. labor market is just really tight in the manufacturing industry. And I think over the next decade, the stats say that there's about 3.8 million manufacturing jobs needed in the U.S. And there's about 1.9 million of those that will not be filled because we have such a shortage in talent to fill those spots. Then you layer on what I'm experiencing and others in manufacturing is we have an aging workforce. We're seeing people retiring. And the younger generation, they're not maybe thinking that this is the most interesting kind of area that they want to come into in a manufacturing job. It's figuring out how do we get that next generation excited about manufacturing because it's really critical to our success that we have the talent on board that we need to do the products that we make.
Yeah, that kind of a labor gap. And it's just like you and I talked before, all the trends are, it's just going to get worse. The trend isn't that there's a big demographic shift and just wait, this is going to get better. It's going to get worse. And so we have to think about what do we do? And thinking about what we do is directly correlated to what's the impact? All these unfulfilled roles, What does it mean? What's the true impact to the company? Because then that places the priority in terms of solving these challenges. In your mind, what is the impact of having manufacturing plants that don't have roles filled that is getting worse?
Yeah. So the impact is on the bottom line from a business perspective, but also can have a ripple on impact to our customers. It's a critical sort of component of how are we going to address this gap? It is geographic where our facilities are at, and some have more issues and some have less. But the impact to me is the bottom line of our financials and meeting the commitment to our customers, which is frankly why we're here and why we're in business.
This is a board level conversation. You've had these conversations of the impact on the business at the board level. What kind of recognition from the leadership of the company all the way up to the board in terms of the importance of solving this problem? Like, I'm going to put you on the spot for a second. If you could say on a scale of 1 to 10, 1, no problem, no impact, 0 impact on the business, 10, significant impact on our long-term growth and viability as a company, where would you put that?
I would say post-COVID, 6 or 7. I don't want to sound too bad because we've got this phenomenal team of people that just gets it done, but it means that they're working a tremendous amount of overtime, trying to fill in the gaps where we have resource constraints. And I would also say it is geographic for us because there are some plants that are okay and the local areas around them have an active candidate pipeline. But the impact is really in Lebanon, Indiana, we have a greenfield site that it came online in 2019. And the first I had just joined, and it was such a focal point. So I've been there a million times. My joke is the guy in the hotel is like, "Hey, Mrs. Anderton, how's it going?" Pretty standard, but pretty good because it is a greenfield site that is phenomenally best in class, one of the best global manufacturing facilities that we put in the ground. And I think what we figured out is when I came in, I'm not sure we had the right leadership team. And so we had a kind of relook at the leadership team was there and change some people out. And then we had to study the marketplace just like a case study. So to give you a sense about this Indiana area, there were only 72 workers for every 100 open jobs. And here we are making this multi-million dollar investment. So it's our first greenfield site in North America. So back to the board level or even the CEO and the CEO of the packaging business unit, the focus was huge. We were reporting monthly, the CEO's coming over to visit, the chairman of the board went. Everybody wants to know what's going on with this investment and why are we struggling to get it at full production, full capacity, what's happening? So lots of pressure, but very geographic, specific to this greenfield site, our first, which we have to do really well, because if we don't do it well, we're not going to get more money to invest in other facilities in North America.
That puts a little pressure on you, doesn't it? And I know that you've talked before about solving this has a lot to do with retention and employee development and thinking about the experience that you're creating. Like those, the really good team that are like making things happen, working overtime, that's not a long-term strategy. We're going to burn these people out. That's a short-term stopgap effort. So how do you think about the whole, how do we acquire? How do we retain? How do we develop employees? The whole life cycle. Yeah. How do you think about this?
Let me tell you, I can roll out all the programs in the world. If I don't have the local managers and the local leadership and supervisors doing the culture and engagement at the site level, no matter what we roll out, we're not going to have an impact. So we really spend an inordinate amount of time focusing on our managers and supervisors. We have a great talent pipeline. We have some expats over here that come in as industry experts to help fill in niches and gaps where we might have some talent shortages. But we really focus on that supervisor and that manager at the site because they are our culture. They are DS Smith. And so we train every leader in the business on a first line manager program that just lays the foundation of culture, values, how to treat people, safety, metrics, what have you. We lay the foundation in. The other thing we do is we have an inclusive leader program that every manager of people has to take. So we embed our culture and a DE&I philosophy of we like to meet people where they're at, and we create environments that cultivate that. And then finally, in the last year, with this attrition and these newly promoted supervisors, we love to grow from within. We love to promote from within, but these newly developed or these newly promoted supervisors need development. They haven't managed people. They don't know how to communicate. They don't know how to work with empathy. They don't know how to give constructive performance feedback. So we've rolled out the leadership essentials really targeted at that first line supervisors to make sure that as they come into our environments, they are treating people the way we want them to treat people, and they're cultivating an environment where people want to stay.
I think you termed that before a sticky culture. And you know, culture can be the kind of things that culture and vision and values are a plaque on the wall, a page on the website, done, check the box. Why is culture so important?
I think it's the differentiator of why people want to come to work. I can pay a little more money. We have a great benefits offering, but you spend an awful lot of time with the people you work with. And if the environment is welcoming, caring, and embracing you and showing interest in you and doing career growth and development, it's the sticky factor to me. If you're just another number, another person, I need you to work overtime. I haven't cultivated that relationship. And we did a project, just to give you another little case study, kind of post-COVID, we did a project called Project Engage. And this goes back to the CEO kind of challenging, what in the world is going on? What's the attrition? Why can't we keep people in the post-COVID world? It was really challenging in a couple of pockets. And what I said is, we actually had the leadership team of the packaging group help us define what are we going to do to tackle the attrition? And what are we going to do to make sure that we create that sticky factor? And we created an entire project plan. We had deliverables. We had 5 core project work sectors on onboarding, talent development, culture, work environment, work streams, project plan. We reported out every month. I had people in the business, the leaders actually owning it. It was very collaborative. It was very reported out in metrics. So we were held accountable to delivering. And we ran it for about 1.5 years. And we came out with some great nuggets of just common sense of revamping our onboarding. Like, we were doing a terrible job. We were getting people in the door, and then we didn't tell them where the lunchroom was or where the bathroom was or how to go to the break. And we have such a safety orientation because we're so busy, or we're hiring people that might not fit in our environment. So why didn't we do a better job assessing the cultural fit? We did a bunch of stuff. We went back to people who worked with us that had a great track record that left us, and we called it the grass isn't greener. We sent them cards. We called them and said, do you want to come back? We miss you. So I would say that anything we did wasn't something that somebody could figure out. But I think the differentiator was, we involved the leaders on the ground floor and the plant managers and the leaders of the business so that we had their buy-in. Because again, I can roll out any programs. If the business doesn't believe in it and they don't think it's going to add value, it's just going to be another program that lands on the shelf. And the thing that was really good is, because it had CEO visibility and we were reporting out monthly, it added a layer of credibility, and he talked about it and he wanted to know about it every month, went to the facility and he talked about it. It encompassed all the plants in North America packaging, but we really had some hot spots through the engagement survey where we knew that we were really having issues. We had to do some leadership changes. It became really evident. And I would say the really cool thing is, in the metric, because you need the analytics to back it up, we ran engagement scores and engagement surveys. We had a pre and a post, and we saw our engagement and enablement scores lift, especially in the targeted plants, 7 to 15 percentage points in a year. It's not my magic. It's my team's magic. It's my leadership who believed in it and believed that we needed to fix this together. And it really was a great example of coming together, having the criteria, having the cadence, the project layout, the credibility, the metrics, and then showing how it resulted in business change at the end. And we saw the attrition go down, and we saw Monica's sticky factor go up. And there's still more to do. There's always stuff to do, but it was a really good example of us having a meaningful impact on the business.
So one of the things that I'm taking away there, you made a very big part about how every level of management, all the way up to the CEO, very involved, thumbprint, fingerprints on it. But you did a lot of surveys. You talked to the workers. Like, you got the voice of the workforce to be a big voice and component into the success of this as well.
Yeah, we needed to make sure it wasn't just our view, it was their view. We did stay interviews. We did some pulsing just one-on-one just to validate what we were doing. So it was survey-based so we could do the numbers, but we also did a lot of focus group type stuff, just testing, okay, would this really make a difference if we had a service anniversary award? Does it really make a difference if I give you a referral bonus to refer somebody that you worked with before? Does it really have an impact on you? What are you looking for? So I think it's a combination of both, but we validated the data. It wasn't just us listening to ourselves, which you're spot on, is critically important.
And so what I love is we talked upfront how you were very business oriented, very analytical, and the 7 to 15% greater engagement. What does that do for the bottom line? What does that do for the amount of recruitment, the amount of retraining, the amount of downtime? Did you come up with some kind of way that you analyze this?
Yeah, the cost of recruiting went down. The overtime went down because we weren't training somebody new. We saw our safety stats get better because we weren't having any safety issues because we had a longer tenured workforce. So the knock-on effect was all the normal sort of manufacturing metrics, we could see them improving. But for us, just on the people side, we use the survey as the benchmark start to finish, but it had a true knock-on effect. We saw more people referring their friends. But the biggest thing was, like, the plants were fully staffed so that we could run without having to run huge amounts of overtime. And we were able to get the customer product out the door as promised. So it had a huge knock-on effect. The other thing I would say is we're super great about celebrating us. So we have a Viva Engage site. We do our stories of engagement. We're huge on community involvement. So we're sharing our community engagement. So we're continuing to sell and tell our story to the wider workforce so they understand that it's evolving and it just doesn't stop. We have to continue. We continue the first line manager program. We've done engagement training. We keep doing sort of the stuff that we knew was the great foundation, and we continue to evolve where we need to.
So all of this phenomenal work takes a big bite out of the challenge that you were talking about up front. It doesn't solve it 100%. So you also have to be innovative just on how you're tackling recruiting for new employees. So tell us a little bit about the creative ideas, the things, the thinking on that subject. Like, how do we just get more, better qualified talent in?
Yeah. I'm going to give you another story, and I'm going to go back to my Greenfield site because this is one I'm really super proud of. And we've got lots of stories, but this one is really critical because of the eyes on this facility and making sure it's successful. The Lebanon, Indiana plant, like I talked about, the market there, very compressed for talent, very short on available candidates, especially post-COVID. I think I told you there's about 72 workers for every 100 jobs, and that's what the U.S. Chamber of Commerce in Indiana told us, and it had a severe rating, which is not helping Monica. I had a great innovative HR manager that when we changed out some of the leadership, I brought in, and she came to us with an idea and said, Monica, I have a weird one. We're struggling to get candidates. We've done all kinds of stuff. We've done billboards. We've had DJs on the front lawn. You name it. We've shrunk wrap semis on the highways. We've tried lots of crazy, cool things. She said, would you be willing for us to hire Hispanic interpreters, one for each shift? And would you be willing as a business to allow us to bring non-English speaking candidates in with these interpreters? And so we're like, okay, tell us more. Why would we do this? How does this look? And so she found a pipeline of candidates in the marketplace that did not speak English. And by adding in these three interpreters, one on each shift, we're first, second, and third, and we were struggling second and third to fill it. So we hire these interpreters, and they are the ambassador from soup to nuts. They help us interview candidates. They help us onboard candidates. They do safety training. They do on the actual equipment training. They help us with performance reviews. They help us with ongoing training. We now have three full-time bilingual interpreters in the plant on each shift. And what it did was it cast this wider net in this very compressed labor market that we were not tapping and had no idea was out there. And then when we got one or two of these non-English speakers, they're like, this place rocks. Like, I have a friend, I have another friend, I have another friend, because they're in refugee communities, some, not all, and they were referring people to us. So the natural outcome, which we hadn't expected, is now we've got this steady referral pipeline. So to give you a sense, in a 2-year period, we've gone from a demographic of Hispanic employees. I think we went from 6 to 42% in a 2-year period. I've got to check my number. I have it written 6 to 42. Okay. I just want to check my sticky. Our demographic has completely shifted. And P.S., we have now filled the second shift, filled the third shift. We're not running huge amounts of overtime. We have this entirely new, diverse workforce that's sharing new perspective, new experiences. They're helping us bond with the local Hispanic community, which loves us and we love them. And the neat thing is we found a maintenance engineer in here. He was from Nicaragua and he was displaced in here as a refugee. And he couldn't tell his story because he didn't speak English. He came in through the interpreter program. Now we know he can do this. Now he's in the maintenance and engineering area where we're struggling to get people. So a weird outcome is we have entry-level openings, but we're finding talent that is qualified that we didn't know about until we opened up this gate. And the thing is, just the culture and the embracing of it has been fabulous. The team just won an award from American Forestry and Paper Association, recognizing us for sustainability, innovation, diversity, and inclusion for the program. And I just can't say how proud I am of them. But the thing is, it was one idea of this HR manager, Becky Gordon, saying, would you let me try this? And me going to business saying, can we float 3 fully loaded headcounts on 3 shifts? And are we willing to take this leap? And we did.
I think one of the things that I'm taking away from this is that we can't just rely on the status quo. If there's challenges that we're facing, they're getting worse and worse. We've got to go outside of the box and think about creative ways that we can do things. If we're not trying, maybe we'll fail at some of them, but maybe some we won't. But we got to keep trying. Shrink wrapping trucks didn't work. Yeah. Creative idea. Yeah. So I love this. I love the inspiration for everyone listening, all the HR leaders here, that there's a way to do things. There's a way to get things done that can be a win-win for everybody.
Yeah. And it's, we have this culture of fail fast and recover. If it didn't work, we wouldn't have kept going, but it did. And I think we also had this foundation of being innovative. Challenge us. Don't let me say no. Challenge the status quo. Think outside the box. We've tried all this stuff. It's not working. When she came and said that, and they were like 3 headcount, they didn't even blink. They're like, okay, try it. Do you think we'll get it staffed? I'm like, I don't know, but we're going to try it.
So we've talked about a lot. What haven't we covered? What would you want to impart to the audience here that I haven't asked the question on yet?
I think I just said it, but I'm just going to say it one more time. As a leader, keep encouraging and challenging your team to be innovative in their approach. We have to step back because the old ways of doing stuff aren't going to work. And we've got business issues and challenges, and the staff and the employees, from the person at the front door to the most senior person, probably has some great ideas. And you have to leverage it. Take a moment to talk to the teams around you. They've got the ideas. You don't always need a high dollar consultant or a program of the week. I think your teams have the answers, and you need to cultivate an environment where people feel safe to bring that kind of stuff forward. So think outside the box, but cultivate an environment where people feel safe to bring that kind of cool idea ahead.
Now, this question, I'm sure you're going to have probably 20 different answers for, but if you could just have one, like not only just everything you've talked about, but your career, what are you the most proud of that you've been able to accomplish?
Oh my gosh, that's such a loaded question. Let me just say my team, okay? And I've got 2 caveats to that, because I think that I had the opportunity to rebuild my team at DS Smith, my team 5 years ago, and they're phenomenal. And we've cultivated a really good crew that works with each other, benchmark shares. So having the right team with the right attitude and the right cultural beliefs is huge. I have to do a shout out to 2 people in executive leadership. And one is Miles Roberts, our CEO. This guy has deep industry knowledge, and he came to the US because our customers wanted us here. And he was only used to a European way of doing stuff. I pushed the envelope. I challenged with retention bonuses and things that they hadn't seen. And he always had a willingness to learn what we were trying to say and why about the market and what the struggles were. And then challenging us to give it a try, but do it right. fail fast, get it going. And then the third person I just need to call out besides my team and Miles is one more executive in Europe, which is, his name is Stefano Rossi, and he is the CEO of the packaging unit. If Miles is the brain, Stefano is too deep knowledge, but Stefano is the enthusiastic guy that says, keep going, don't stop, keep going, push forward, you've got it, push the envelope, be innovative. And those two guys supporting me, my team, the leadership in North America has made a huge difference. We've created this innovative culture, and it allows us and the team at large to be innovative and push ideas forward. And this really impacted the business. So just my team always, they're great. I love them. Miles and Stefano, rock star leaders.
I think they're going to really appreciate hearing you say that as one. But secondly, if there was one piece of wisdom or one takeaway that you wanted people to have from this podcast, because our poor human brains can't remember more than about three things from sitting. If there was one thing that you wanted people to take away today, what would that be?
It is imperative as an HR leader or person to create strong partnerships with your business leaders and include them in how you're attracting, developing, and retaining talent. They are the two true owners of the culture and the story that they tell. And you have to have a strong relationship where you're fostering problems and figuring out problems together. And it is critically important to understand the business, know the metrics, know their pinch points, and then how can you bring in the people solutions to help them craft solutions to whatever the issue at hand is. Strong business relationships with the leaders is huge. Know the business.
I kind of feel like we could go on another couple hours. What I would say is, if people had questions, because I know they're going to have questions for you, would it be appropriate that we gave out a link to your LinkedIn profile that people could reach out?
Absolutely. It's Monica Z. Lake and Zebra Anderton, and I'm on LinkedIn. So there's probably not a lot of Monica Z. Andertons, T-O-N, not F-O-N. And I'd be happy to chat with anybody. So feel free to reach out.
Well, Monica, thank you so much for coming on so many different levels. You've expanded, you've inspired. I just want to say thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I love telling our story, and it's been great. Thanks so much for letting me share it, Steve.